It's me, Mario.
Hello, and welcome to episode of the Nintendo Retain Podcast. I am Triforce Todd, and joining me today is Wario Will.
Well, I guess that it has been true regarding to the old-fashioned saying, April showers, May flowers, because it has been torrential these past few days in my side of the world. Jeez Louise. Like, yes, I get it. We're getting to the ready of spring and all that. We're going to the sakura flowers and all that. But the earth had to be so... basically torrential rain us, please. Come on.
The earth is giving us bad weather. In other news, water wet. Especially these days. I sympathize with your weather situation. Will, I've been dealing with something similar here in Illinois, and I'm hoping it will literally dry up before I have to travel this weekend. We shall see. Also, someone I need to see about is Clunk and Scott.
Hooray! Though, for the rain and all the weather, I just like having hot cocoa. Makes the rain go down a little easier.
True. And either be hot cocoa or tea on my side of things. Yeah, like that's at least one silver lining in cold weather. Just huddle up with something hot and then you're pretty much golden.
You know, I'm actually surprised I don't eat, or sorry, drink. You could eat it, I suppose, but I don't recommend it. I don't drink more hot cocoa and hot chocolate because I know I like it. I used to enjoy like going to restaurants with my family during, you know, like November, December, January, and they're like, "What would you like to drink?" I go, "Hot chocolate or hot cocoa," and they give like the whipped cream. And I remember some places had like a cherry on top. Mm-hmm. You know, the good stuff. You know, and those are the days. And now I just like, no, I don't really need it, but I could get it. I mean, but that's effort. I have to go to the store. Then I have to prepare it. I mean, my gosh, how much time do you think I have? Actually,
it is definitely kind of those things. Like, or I don't know, you could go to your local diner or restaurant and have them. I don't know, like something like IHOP or some sort. Wink, nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Yeah. Or I could just like go get a milkshake, which is just as good. So, choices in life, choices. So speaking of, there will be lots of choices talked about tonight for sure, including in a very. Actually, I think this is going to be a unique main event. I really do believe that. But first, what have you been playing? And hey, how about Will goes first this time? I think it's been a while since you've gone first, Will.
Yeah, and for the most part, it's just more or less been basically one major game. But first things first, obviously, like continuing on the mobile gaming fronts right now. Thankfully, on the Fire Emblem Heroes. Like I think we discussed it already last time before, but again, just a quick reminder. Yeah, Legendary Emblem Ike is currently out at the moment right now. Only like a few more days left to pull him, and yeah, I'm just very thankful that I am. I mean, that's kind of the one thing becoming a paid past subscriber for paying every single 10 months. But hey, I only have to use only 160 orbs to get Emblem Ike, and that's it. I mean, look, I'm just having one copy. If I get him before the 47 sparking, then fine. But yeah, as we covered before, Emblem Ike is very good. So definitely, if you want to pull them, definitely try to pull them. And of course, naturally, last night, if I recall correctly, we just recently got the trailer for the new younger banner, which is Young Awakening cast. We're calling Young, Marv, Robin, and Elise. Yeah, it's like, okay, I mean, fine, but at the same time, I'm not really too impressed. I mean, the units themselves are pretty strong, but yeah, the big consensus base itself is very uninspired, if anything else. So, Young Awakening cast, take a pick, whatever you will. So, yeah, that's that.
This is one of those things where it's like, I know what you're trying to do, but the young thing really just doesn't work as a concept, because half the point is that many of these characters aren't warriors when they're children, or they haven't canonically, like with the case of young Soren, he hasn't canonically met Ike at that point. And so it's like, how is he this strong in magic when he didn't even have his BFF or more, depending on how you read it, and his life? It's like, they're just saying like, hey, let's make these characters, but cuter. Like, okay, that's called chibi. That's another thing entirely. And you know what? We shall be thankful that they haven't done young Kamiya.
Please, that's a territory I'm not treading.
Imagine.
I mean, sure, if you want to go. I mean, like, yeah, there is a genre for that, but again, yeah. This is not a manga podcast, no. So I'm not going to go into that point. No.
But like, because there's only two ways they could draw a young Camilla, and either way, it's going to be either suggestive in one way or suggestive in another, and it's just like they're going to get to it eventually. It's inevitable.
It's inevitable, as Dan would say. And yeah, unfortunately, we don't need the FBI on us at the moment right now. Nope. So yeah, thankfully for us.
I'm already on their watch list, so I don't need another reason to look to hunt me down.
Looking up all those Karlach stuff. No,
So yeah, aside from Fire Emblem Heroes, of course, thankfully, Gacha Gods have also been very good for me in Goddess of Victory Nikkei, which, if you haven't known already, there is a current anime collab with ReZero, which is an interesting collab to say the least, but thankfully I managed to go and get Rem and Amelia, which if you know the memes, you know the memes. But heck, I'm just happy because thankfully I got one character each. I'm not gonna go full on Honkai Star and get E6 them. I'm just like, I don't need three copies. Nope. I'll just take one copy and that's good enough for me. And these anime collabs, I mean, they're fun. Obviously, they're not really meant to go for unless you are Nier Automata, but that's a different story. But so far, it's an interesting collab, a little make happy with you. So yeah, Nikkei Gods of Victory has been good. But the majority of what I've been playing this past week and weekend is more or less Unicorn Overlord for PS5. And also, it's also available on Switch as well. And it is... It is definitely a very breath of fresh air, if anything, if I can best describe it as. Like, I'm just very happy to hear in regard to news, like, how the sales number has been doing very good for this game, no matter what system it may be. And again, just the world of Unicorn Overlord. And I've currently reached up to the third territory of Bastoria, which is basically the realm of the Beastkin. And, okay, I mean, I've seen Vanilla Works wares before on the works of Beastkin, like the Owl Bear and such forth. But yeah, like seeing these the new biscuit Beastkin as well as like the shopkeeps, they have a freaking bunny as a shopkeep. Like, okay, that's cute. So yeah, and just the story of it all. I mean, I could see like some people didn't find it as like it's not as deep as like other games out there, but it's simple enough that you can really get engrossed in the world. Like seeing the land of the elves of Elheim and seeing like the desert plains and the rocky terrains of Drakenhold, basically Realm of the Dragons and all that, is like just seeing and just. But it was also heavily, more or less a very heavy numbers game. Like, yeah, just obviously stronger as you are, you get more points. They basically better up on the RNG. So, yeah, there is a sense of RNG in Unicorn Overlord, but it's also just that feeling of like just overpowering your enemies with your regent, cavalries and armies and all that. But yeah, just again, another word, peak design, great artwork. Again, elf. By all means, the Dark Elves. I'll just say that.
Oh, you're just saying this guy. He's just saying he likes the Dark Elves for their culture.
I mean, again, it's sure, sadly enough, it's a stereotype, unfortunately, yes. But you gotta give props to Vanilla Worth Dark Elves designs. I'm just gonna say that if you play Dragon's Crown, you would know.
Yeah, so. just the designs.
Yes. but overall the game itself is just absolutely fun, and even like the simple like grinding aspects of like making your own armies and casts and all that is just absolutely amazing. And I honestly would think that you would probably enjoy this game, Todd, because there is one character which is in the Colosseum I think you may like. But there are definitely a lot of cast of characters that you may enjoy as well. It's a very enjoyable kind of cast, so I think you would like it.
Given that Will said that there are only two options for this, Scott, it's either a 7-foot-tall demon-esque goddess named Karlach, or Karlach-esque, doubt it's her, or he remembers my love of a certain character named Aisha Clan, so it's probably a Catwoman.
At the moment, I don't see a cat woman. I know there's a werefox, and I know there's werewolves, and and all that. So think of it as a Fennec Fox female form. We're getting to Star Fox territory, basically.
There you go.
Does
that mean it's a Karlach-esque character?
There is, and surprisingly, she is basically an endgame wife, like, if anything else. Like, the requirements for her, like, she is literally, like, you only get her at the end game, which is, like, you have to be level 40 squadron, or even, like, max out 50 just to get her. And, like, yeah, she beak. I'm just going to say that. If the listeners know who I'm talking about, you know who I'm talking about. But, yeah, she's basically an endgame wife. So, definitely that. But overall, yeah, Unicorn Overlord, definitely fun. By all means, definitely try it out if you have a chance. Again, the demo's out right now if you want to try it out.
All right, Scott, how about you?
Alrighty, so I've gone back to, well, I've been consistently playing Honkai Star Rail, but I actually went through a bit more of the story this time because they added a lot to the second half of Panicani, and I'm still not done with it, but they made it with, like, a pretty fun little design choice where you can play as, you play as both your character as well as another character, Adventurine, as Adventurine's, like, trying to figure out how to get an audience with the family. Because he's trying to talk to them and try to realize how he can get an audience with them because they're in charge of the dreamscape. To make dreams become reality kind of a deal. So it's fun to see, like, all that. And then we also get to learn about Dr. Ratio, who still has one of the best names in the game.
Wait, hold on. Dr. Ratio? Ratio?
Yeah, Ratio. Dr. Ratio. Ratio.
Spell it.
R-A-T-I-O.
Okay, Ratio. I'm sorry. When you said over your mic, I swear they said Dr. You said Dr. Ratio. R-A-C-I-A-L.
Oh, no. Which would have been Dr. Ratio. Who...
Ratio. Okay. Got ratioed.
Ironically, both like a pun, but also the way that he's used in the story is also more ironic with his name because he kind of goes around and he doesn't necessarily backstab people, but he generally puts them at a disadvantage with his own means.
Kind of reminds me of a certain real life figure in regard to a doctor. Yeah.
So it was fun seeing some of that. I've also went back to my second account for Grand Blue Fantasy Relink, which is my PC one.
Scott, you have a problem.
I have a big problem. I've tried to do my best to not make my main in this profile id, because on my third playthrough and I finally finished with the epilogue, my main went back to id, and I was just like, I just can't keep going back to him. But he's just so much fun to play. But I've been trying to work on my fairy skills as I've been doing some of the quests to get to finish the epilogue. But I think it's also because I know a few people on PC who will be wanting to play Grand Blue Fantasy Relink, and so I need to get my account in a way I actually help them. And as well as I need to actually get my PC account to be able to get some of the new stuff. So it's going to be fun because we still are getting updates in the game. There's still updates coming this month and next month. I've also just barely started Dragon's Dogma 2.
Oh, okay.
One that I also won from a giveaway.
Scott, you have a problem.
Wow, lucky for you.
I have a problem that's called entering giveaways, yes.
And winning them, apparently. Seriously, people, he has won a lot of giveaways just in the last, like, what, 6 months or so? Yeah. It's like, hey, I won another giveaway. Oh, that's good for you, Scott. I've won another giveaway. I'm like, how? It's like,
the RNG gods have been kind.
They like me better than gacha games. But yeah, so Dragon's Dogma is, in one word, chaos. Like, it is just chaos. Everything is going on all the time. Which does make it fun, but at the same time, it also can make it a bit frustrating because you'll be like, I know exactly what I'm going to be doing. And then all of a sudden you have like one of your pawns with a personality just like running away from the party because they found a treasure chest. And then it's three pawns versus like a giant wave of enemies until the fourth one finally shows back up to realize that you're been in a disadvantage. So you just had to like run away. And so then they go fight themselves and it's like, oh, well, now you're just trying to fight the army yourself. And then they die. So you have to go rescue them. And it is just a lot of chaotic nonsense going on, which is actually really fun. And like one of the opening acts, you have to stay in you don't have to. You can choose to stay on the wagon or guard it with the guard. So I decided what would happen if I, just stayed in the wagon. and my pawns kept following the guards, so they were helping them. And then random goblins and ogres were just randomly attacking the wagon. And my one pawn, who's just super curious, will just leave because they see a treasure chest on top of a hill. They'll jump at the hill, grab the treasure, go back down, and then start guarding again. See, like, a twig on the ground, go over, like, all the way across the map, grab the twig, go back to the wagon. Just, like, putting your pawns on curious is some of the best and worst things, because they'll find anything to grab. Like, hey, there's a twig, there's a tree branch, there's this, we could use this. It's like, that's literally just an apple, just leave it. But it's just kind of fun just to have the insanity of what Dragon's Dogma brings to the table, because, like, it has, like, giant boss fights where you can jump on top of, like, ogres and dragons and try to get on their backs, and if you do get on their back without wasting all your stamina, you can then start stabbing them in weak spots, which does a significant amount of damage, a lot more damage than trying to just randomly hit their legs. But Dragon's Dog was actually really fun, but it is chaos incarnate. So there's definitely a reason why some people don't like it and some people love it.
Chaos!
Because it is a game that is unlike any other in the sense that things just kind of happen all over the place. It just, like, it just, like, plays itself at times, and how, like, the physics and the engine and, like, the world AI works.
Oh, okay.
So if you want to have that kind of experience, yeah, Dragon's Dogma is for you. But if you just want to have a little more control in how the world operates or anything, then it's not really the game for you. Because your sense of control is just how good you are at playing the game. Because otherwise, everything just kind of happens. Your party members can be good based on their personalities, or you can get a pawn whose personality is absolutely garbage.
The one that
I found that, like, the least useful is usually the defensive personality, because they kind of just stay behind your person and you're just like, okay. I mean, I appreciate if it's like a mage that just wants to heal you at all times, but it also kind of hurts the fact that they could just, like, shoot fire or lightning anywhere, but they decide not to because, hey, you have one less HP than you did before.
Oh, okay.
So the best personalities, I'd say, are, like, the aggressive ones and then the curious ones. But the curious ones also, again, have the chaotic nature, just go anywhere because they see a twig on the ground. There's a lot of twigs. They'll be grabbing a lot of things from trees. Which, to be fair to my pawn that has that personality, they're also a ranger, so they use it to make arrows. But it's just kind of hilarious that you'll be in the middle of a fight and they'll be like, ooh, shiny thing. Sorry, gotta leave.
Okay. Like, ooh, shiny, ooh, this candy.
We're in the middle of a war, yeah, but there's a twig underneath this guy's boot. Yeah, but he's dead. Come help us fight the live people. Oh, I did go back and play the pre-sequel of Borderlands.
Oh, okay.
Because right. I wanted to see how, it went to, like, the range and everything of the first Borderlands after playing it, and I have to say the pre-sequel is balanced so much better than the first Borderlands. Like, they had to learn so much from one and, well, two's still pretty good too, but the pre-sequel's, like, balance to gameplay and actually getting loot that's sort of useful is very handy. So yeah, the first Borderlands did not age as well as I'd hoped.
Yeah.
I understand. All right, as for me, I am still going through Baldur's Gate 3. I was very busy over the weekend, so I've only been able to play for the last few days, but I am really, I think I'm, like, right there on the edge transition between Act 2 and Act 3. And man, this game is just so good. Like, I finally, I guess not spoilers, but, like, I got to face Catherick Thorne first time. And that was a tough boss fight, but again, I just used strategy and I got through it. Then he's like, yeah, no, I'm just going to totally leave, like, halfway through with half my health bar cut. And, you know, summon this giant, you know, gotta be careful how to say this. I don't want to get Will excited. tentacle thing. And,
of course.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, kidnapped Damon Aelil, how do you say her name? That she was helping me. Then I have to go into the Mind Flayer lair. Flayer lair, that's nice. Where it's just like, it is so creepy down there, and then, like, random fights just break out and all that. And, like, one of them was literally, I enter a room and nothing is there, and I'm like, so I'm just searching around, and all of a sudden these, like, four people show up and they're like followers of Thorm, and they're like, hey, you shouldn't be down here. You clearly are a betrayer to Thorm. I'm just gonna kill you. And I'm like, good luck with that. And I killed them very easily. And then I finally made it to Thorm, and then you get like the big twist about like who he actually serves and who he's working with, and it's like Karlach got angry, so of course I got angry about what was going on, and then I had to face a god thing. It was a lot, but and then it's like, hey, instead of killing this guy with like half a health bar left, you have to kill a god with 250 HP. And you did things the wrong way. It didn't free your angel friend or Telemoon princess friend first. You are so screwed. Yeah, like literally that boss fight is, it's 250 HP, but he's also invincible until you free the angel thing, whatever you want to call her, and Moon Goddess. And she's on the other side of the map, so you have two options. You either do it the manual way, which is going to get you killed, or you do like a potion of invisibility or invisibility spell, and you go free her before the fight. And that's what I did. And apparently there was a Reddit thread goes, this was the boss fight that actually made me quit Baldur's Gate because I couldn't get it. And I'm like, yeah, I could see that. But like once I unleashed ATL, like she dominated. Like she wasn't even breaking a sweat. The only reason she almost died was because she lost a lot of health beating Kethric Form the first time, which again, she did a lot of damage for me. So yeah, I'm going to keep her alive. So I literally positioned everyone close to her so I could get her some healing spells and rallying points. And then he just sucked us in with this attack. And it's like, oh, you want to die then? Fine. We can all just whiff on you, wail away on you right now. And like this game is just so deep with lore. The voice acting is great. Like I just learned more about Will and how he got tied up with Mizora. Mm. And there's just so much going on. And then I got Jahira as a teammate. She's really awesome.
Yes.
Yeah. She was like, I could come with you into the lair if you want. And then I'm like, you know, my party's actually pretty good right now. And I'm like, I'm glad I didn't, because while she is good, her powers weren't suited to the fights I was about to have. So
yeah,
I got a good squad. So it's going to take a while. It would take something big for me to get away from, you know, Karlach, Shadowheart, and Will. So, especially now that Will has all these spell points that I can use, same way.
Yeah, once Will gets, like, later on, he gets to be a beast.
Yeah, like, the first two levels, I was fine with Asterion, because he's, like, you know, stabbing and shooting and poisoning and turning invisible and all that. But once I was like, I need more range, and, like, I think Will's a warlock, you know? I think he is. And then I just leveled up, and I found this new ability called Sentinel, which allows you to do an attack if someone attacks an ally close to you. And I'm like, yes! More damage! So, and it's all just about... That's all Baldur's Gate really is that as long as you are at the right level, all it takes is the right strategy to overcome a great enemy. And I love that. Now, yes, sometimes the boss fights are still freaking long, but this one, I was like, I was so worried, and I just retuned my strategy. I got ATL out first, and then I got it first time. I didn't have to do massive getbacks like I did with the first attack on the Moonrise Towers, which took me forever because I didn't fully understand what was going on. But I am so excited to get to actual Baldur's Gate. I get to go to the actual city now and see what havoc and chaos I can consume and, you know, have some fun there. I heard there's a place called a Hot House of Hope. Who knows what fun could be at there? Yes, I know what happens there. I've seen the videos and the memes. Okay, like even the one with actual Karlach and Clive saying that they have taken over the Hot House of Hope. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting third act, and I look forward to it. So, like, I literally wrote for another website. I was writing a game about the best narratives ever, and like the people gave me a list, and Baldur's Gate was on there, and I think I put it at number 13, which goes to show you how great the other 12 games were. But like, I could easily put it in top 10, and I'm not even in the third act yet. It's just that good. So if you seriously have not gotten Baldur's Gate yet, what do you have against Karlach? I mean, what do you have against great games? So especially since we know that Baldur's Gate 4 isn't happening with Larian, so who knows if we'll ever get it. So, you know, do it, play it now. Do it. Also, weird side note, if you have Skype on your phone, you might be noticing you're getting a lot more notifications recently. I had Skype because before the pandemic, it was my go-to source for a lot of contacts with people. Then this thing called Zoom got created during the pandemic, and that went away. But I still have it on my phone because there's some people that still contact me there occasionally. And now all of a sudden, I'm getting these weird Skype news today. It's like, are you just trying to make yourself relevant? Because you're failing.
You can't be the one and all video app, then maybe.
Yeah, unfortunately, we have a thing called Discord. Look, like Skype, you weren't the thing before, but you just couldn't improve along with the times. You're like, yeah, you're a relic. I'm sorry, Skype, you're a relic.
Yeah, I was watching John Oliver this past week, and he was talking about food delivery apps and how they really, you know, gained super popularity during the pandemic for obvious reasons, right?
Yeah.
And then he mentioned how Skype had the golden opportunity to reassert itself as like the dominant video chat platform, and it failed. How did you screw that up? How did you lose to Zoom? Like, let's just be honest. While Zoom can be great, it also has a time limit thing, which is infinitely annoying. Skype never had that.
Nope. So,
like, how did you screw this up? How did he screw this up? I need to know. So, yeah. So, just stop annoying me, Skype. I don't care. I don't need these Skype updates with news stuff. Like, stop. Just stop it. All right. And with that, we're going to head over to the news because there has been a wide range of interesting topics this week. I can talk. I know I can. I'm the host. I have to talk, despite what you all think. So it's time to go down the war pipe. And first, 3DS and Wii U. Nintendo is actually bringing them back. All right, they're going to give them another chance. No, I'm just joking. what's actually happening is that the online for both shuts down next week. So if you have been one of the... Okay, I want to ask an honest question. Who here is still using the online for that outside of, you know, maybe an eShop or two? And the eShop's already shut down, right? So, like...
Yeah, it's just basically for multiplayer for Mario Kart 8. I mean, we have on Switch already, so...
But you have on Switch.
I mean, unless you're, like, the last remainder of people who hold out who have not got a Switch yet. You just, like, continue on doing with the... I think as well, because I think this is also will be affecting Street Pass as well. Like, one, you can no longer play any more of Super Mario Maker levels on Wii U. And I know, like, there was, like, one news article, like, a little bit ways back, that apparently, one of the last official unbeatable Mario Maker levels was just beaten just, then. So, like, yeah, like, you can't play any Mario Maker levels. You can't play multiplayers on Mario Kart 8 Deluxe on Wii U. Basically, everything, like, if there's anything, a major online component on a Wii U game, yeah, you can say goodbye. That we're running out of time. Like, yeah. You're just about the last time, as well with the 3DS, regarding to Street Pass, regarding to any other, like, online feature of those systems. Because, yeah, we're already moving on to Switch already. And if you want to get, like, anything else, like, again, final updates regarding to any of these games, then by all means, you only have a few days left. And yeah, it's just kind of sad to, yeah, it's finally ending, and no regrets. Have regrets or no regrets is up to you. So just a reminder, next week the servers are shutting down, so if you want to play some more online matches, more Mario Maker levels, yeah, this is your last chance.
So it was just funny. Like, Will was like, "Oh yeah, we were switching over to the Switch. It's been here for 7 years. it hasn't snuck up on you, ladies and gentlemen. It's been here. So I mean, again, there are probably some games that haven't surprisingly been ported to the Switch. Xenoblade, but you've had your time. You've had your time. You've enjoyed it. Now go play the Switch while that's still popular enough. So just stop being weird." All right, now let's get to the real news, because this is a story that people have been debating for a while since it was announced. So I'm going to give you three names: Sakurai, Harada, and Yoshi P. Together in one photo, presumably eating a meal. But why are they eating the meal? this came via Insider Stealth, and it was posted on a bunch of other places, including by the people in the photo. And Stealth went, they must be discussing Smash Brothers and how to keep all the Square Enix content in the next game, right? To which I say, why is Harada there for that then? Like,
quick reminder, they Bandai Namco has worked it on Smash Brothers.
This is true.
Reminder that.
This is true. So, like, okay. If we want to go down the conspiracy rabbit hole, we absolutely can. But make no mistake, ladies and gentlemen, this could just be a dinner between friends.
Yes.
I know it's hard to hear, but friends have dinner sometimes.
Sometimes they just want to talk to each other.
Yeah.
Not every little thing has to be a work meeting.
Yeah, like think of it this way, okay? Sakurai's been doing his YouTube thing. For all we know, he's not working on a game right now, right? Harada just released Tekken 8 and is now getting berated because of the microtransactions that just got inserted. And then Yoshi P over there with Final Fantasy just had a huge release with Rebirth. So this might be like their downtime.
I mean, Yoshi P, regarding to the expansion of, I think the new title. I forgot
breathe,
the name.
Will, breathe, speak.
Yeah, sorry. I think
regards Dawn to Trail.
Dawn Trail for Final Fantasy VII 14, as well as for Final Fantasy 16's new expansion. I forgot, it's like Tidal Wave, something like that, with Leviathan. I forgot the name, I'm sorry.
Yeah, the Rising Tide.
Right. Rising Tide, thank you. Yeah. So, yeah, just basically Final Fantasy, Tekken 8, and the maker of Smash Brothers together for a dinner date.
Yeah. Now, let's go on the opposite end of this rabbit hole, okay? Because I think there's something that people forget, and Sakurai has made this very, very clear on his various videos. Sakurai is technically not tied to Nintendo. He is independent.
Yes.
He has his own company, Sora LTD, and he is like the only employee there, but it is his company, and thus he is an independent contractor. So if we really wanted to go down a rabbit hole, this could be Yoshi P and Harada asking Sakurai to come make a game with them. So I mean, so why is it they're going to Sakurai maybe to make a game with him? Maybe they called Sakurai to make a game for them.
Ooh.
The potential. Or it could be Sakurai is like, okay, look, Harada, I know you're making great fighting games, but what the heck with these microtransactions, man? You had a great launch, you had record sales, and now you're just throwing in the microtransactions? You think I do that with Smash Brothers? Do you think I became the leader of the best fighting game franchise of all time, suck it, with such microtransactions? No, I did not, Harada. And then he looks at Yoshi P, goes, look, dude, you did great with Rebirth. The ending was weird with the live stream and the wraiths and all that. So, like, you know, you gotta straighten that out. And then Final Fantasy 14, just, you know, keep doing what you're doing, but don't be afraid to go bigger, go bolder, you know, add some Sephiroth, you know, if you must, you know, throw a big twist in there. You know, I'm sure, no, actually, I kind of wonder if that does happen sometimes, like friends of the other industry vets just go, dude, what are you doing? Like, is this your idea? Please tell me this is your idea. Because like, let's be honest, though they're all like higher echelon, they have to rag on each other every once in a while, right? I mean, we gotta believe they do that.
It's, if anything else, again, each developer has their own personal philosophy of how they should develop games. Like, again, Suda51, crazy as bollocks, and just like could be the worst thing possible is a breath of fresh air. And so again, Sakurai is just Sakurai. You've seen his videos, you know how he thinks and believes. And yeah, just like the many different developers and creators out there in the gaming industry. Like, sure, again, different philosophies, different development pathways. Like, it will cross-section, cross-zone one way or another. And you can only imagine, again, if you were a fly on that wall and just listening to them, like, what are they talking about?
Indeed. So, or maybe Yoshi P is trying to convince Harada to let Tifa into Tekken 8, and Sakurai's there to be the mediator because he's already worked with Final Fantasy characters in the fighting game. Like, look, Tifa is the perfect person for a crossover. I don't know. Like, look, when we did Sephiroth and Cloud, Square Enix was let us do our thing, so they'll let you do the same with Tifa. Like, but does Tifa really work? Like, yeah, the limit breaks everything.
It won't work. It's just like everybody. Like, the fact that Harada has been also vocal on Twitter/X, like, generally taking suggestions as well. I mean, heck, there's even like a one suggestion from one Twitter user basically asking, can you put in the Waffle House stage? Like, that was thread. A meme of a meme of a time.
Devil Artemis just did that. He had Kazuya fight Cell in the Waffle House. And I'm like, what the heck is going on here? Now I realize it's a meme. Okay, I got you. Greater than Waffle House at 3 a.m.
Yeah, and like even asking for people like, oh, if you want this character to be in this game in Tekken, okay, ask this thing, make a raise up on Twitter/X, and then we can talk about it. Basically, it's like, again, Harada is Harada. Yeah. You just like, don't ask me for, again, he he doesn't take BS from anybody, but he knows like when to have fun. So yeah.
Here's the thing. If he or anyone at Bandai Namco is like, would people pay to get Tifa into Tekken? Because it would have to be like a season pass kind of thing. Here's the thing you need to remember. There's customizable outfits in Tekken 8.
Yes, you can pretty much make it anybody.
Exactly. So imagine what people, both male and female, would do with Tifa, and there's your money. Like, it's not even a contest. Like, I'm just saying. I mean, there's a lot of lovely ladies in Tekken. I'm not saying there's not, but this is Tifa.
You know? Like, sure, you can make a lookalike Tifa. You have a bargain bin Tifa, but we want the official one.
Yeah, we want the real Tifa. We want the OG. Well, okay, not technically the OG, but like the remake version.
The real. I'm asking for Tifa. No, the real Tifa. Perfection.
And it's just like the 8-bit little boxy thing.
Oh, sure. Like, if they want to bring in the whole 8-bit model of Tifa, which they have done in Rebirth, then why not? Sure, why not? Just for a costume sake.
What a world we live in. All right. Now let's step back from that conspiracy theory to go to another conspiracy theory. But this one is a little bit more refined, let's just say. Okay, so here's the deal. Occasionally, Nintendo sends out surveys for what they want to hear from fans about, you know, potential new games, fixes to current games, et cetera, et cetera. You might recall that before the announcement of WarioWare, what was it again? Move It, right? That was last year. They sent out a survey to fans asking, hey, would you play another WarioWare game? Apparently the response was yes, and so they made this one. Well, in light of the upcoming Paper Mario Thousand Year Door Remaster remake, which, by the way, we still don't technically know what it is, Nintendo of Europe, according to Stealth, released a survey about both the Paper Mario and Mario & Luigi and Super Mario RPG franchises. Yes, franchises, it's three of them. And this on its own wouldn't be much, except here are the questions, okay? Below you see a list of features that are common for most games from the Paper Mario, Mario & Luigi, and Super Mario RPG series. Which of these features do you like? Then the next question is, the Paper Mario games and et cetera, have a wide range of different battle systems and mechanics. Which of these aspects do you like the most? And if you look through the list, it's specifically talking about the turn-based style versus free flow style versus, you know, unique combat system style, and, you know, do you want a partner with Mario or don't you? And it's very obvious to those who have looked at this that Nintendo is gauging whether to, you know, actually listen to fans and give us a true Paper Mario Thousand Year Door sequel, or try to do what they've done in the past and continue. So, And I'm being serious about these suggestions, like, let me just, like, get stronger by leveling up and learning new abilities, increasing the power of defense by pressing buttons at the right time, having partners with Mario, companions fighting alongside Mario versus Mario fighting alone, filling a gauge of precise inputs and using powerful moves and attacks when full, like with the star powers, et cetera, et cetera. So far, based on what Stealth has heard, it's only my Nintendo users in Europe that's getting this, which is why we haven't gotten it yet, because we would have plenty of answers for them. But yes, this gives us hope, as small as it is right now, that Nintendo's finally realizing, hey, maybe we should go back to what we did with Paper Mario Thousand Year Door, because the hype behind this game is real.
Yes.
All right. I don't remember if we talked about this on the podcast, but Amazon sold out of the game via pre-orders. How? How does that happen? I don't know, but it happened. And I would bet you anything, especially with how, let's just be generous, light the release schedule has been for the Switch this year, this is going to be the best seller, for right now at least.
Unless they reveal something insane for second half, but
which they could.
Yeah, I doubt it.
Hold on, remember, we didn't know about Wonder until June of last year.
That's true. That's true.
And Super Mario RPG Remake. That's two.
Yep.
So, you know, we got to give them a little more leeway, but if by the actual next Nintendo Direct, whatever, partner showcase, if they don't have anything, then we can panic. But seriously, like, this gives me hope, because, look, we love Nintendo. I mean, we're doing the gosh dang podcast for 372 episodes. We clearly love Nintendo enough to go that long on, you know, take time out of our busy Thursdays, clearly.
You either do that out of love or spite.
Well, hate goes far, apparently. I can make a lot of jokes here, but I won't. But Nintendo has absolutely fumbled the Paper Mario and the Mario and Luigi franchises over the years. Remember, they changed it because Miyamoto decided, hey, we can't keep using the same battle system over and over again. Fans won't like that. Yes, we will.
Yeah.
I mean, Miyamoto, dude, bro, you do realize that Mario has the same mechanics as he did in his like original platforming titles. No, not the versus title, but like the platforming titles. The only thing you've changed is the power-ups and the kinds of things you can interact with in the world. The mechanics are the same. And we still have epic turn-based RPG titles to this day. And yet they were like, no, we got to change this. And then, no, we're going to do stickers. Then we're going to do colors. And we're going to do, you know, paper jam weirdness with the crossover franchise. And then they stopped making Mario and Luigi because those games had a lack of quality. And they're like, oh, well, it's confusing to the market. No, it's not confusing to the market. It's two different franchises. One's paper, one's not. We can tell.
I think that'd be easier difference. To figure out what, you know, the differences like, are.
Okay, this is one of these is Mario, which one of these is Paper Mario. Can you tell the difference? Yeah, I think I can. So they just been screwing up, and then yes, I know that Origami King did well enough, but it didn't sell as much as a Thousand Year Door, not to my knowledge. And now they're making the remake, which is easily going to surpass what the GameCube numbers did. This is one of the best JRPGs of all time. Period. And best RPG.
Really? I was about to say, like, you really gonna put it in the same class as JRPGs?
I had to do a video on JRPGs today, and Paper Mario was on the list, so deal with it. And it does have JRPG flair. I mean, let's be honest here.
It does.
So, but yeah, if it is one of the best RPGs of all time, and one of the best Nintendo games of all time. I was gonna say Mario, but that's actually kind of restricting me if you think about it. It's one of the best Nintendo games of all time, and they're like, no, let's completely change it, like over and over and over and over. And they're like, why is this not working? Because you're not listening to us. We've been begging for years. Go back to turn-based combat. Give us epic companions that we actually fight alongside. Have a nice narrative to tie it all together, and keep it paper. What more do you need?
Like it's already been said before already. Like, you don't need to reinvent the wheel. Like, if it ain't broken, don't fix it. And regarding to this game is, I don't know, it's basically in the same basic idea of give what the people want, what they want. That's really it. Is it really that much of a hard of a concept? Apparently for some it is. And like, yeah, Thousand Year Door remake. It's just, again, what people want. It's just that simple.
Yeah. I mean, look, all we know is that this is a survey, and we don't know what the people will say. And as we're going to talk about literally next, polls and surveys don't always go the direction you think they will. But my hope is that, given the love for Thousand Year Door, people are going to lean towards the turn-based combat that we actually like, and we'll hopefully get that, because there is such a thing as being too experimental, and that's exactly what we had with Sticker Star, Paper Jam, Color Splash, and even Origami King. They refused to go back to what came before because they're like, no, we have to keep changing it. No, you don't. Final Fantasy didn't change itself for, what, 11 versions before they actually went to a more real-time strategy element? And they still had turn-based tactics in there. And look at Final Fantasy Rebirth. It's a mix of turn-based and real-time elements, which is awesome.
Yep.
So just stop thinking you need to keep being experimental and just start thinking what we need to do to get this franchise back. And the answer is give us a Thousand Year Door sequel or true follow-up. I wouldn't even say sequel because it's been too long. But a true follow-up in the vein of the original Paper Mario and then Thousand Year Door. It's literally that simple. And here's the best part. If you do it, and if it doesn't sell well because of actual sales, not because of lack of quality, that doesn't count. If it's a hit, praise critical darling, but doesn't sell well, then you don't have to listen to us anymore.
Go back to the other Paper Mario method.
Yeah. I know. Exactly. It's like you could say, like, well, what if it doesn't work? Maybe, but what if it does? What if it's one of the best games on your next console in its first few years, which is what you want? You want a large stack of games early, like you did with the Switch. This could be one of those titles. Easy. Just saying. And never forget, ladies and gentlemen, one of the biggest hits on the Switch, especially in its first year, was Rabbids.
Yep.
Mario and Rabbids. That was experimental in the good way. What's happened to Paper Mario after 1,000 Year Door is experimental in the bad way. There's a difference.
Yep.
All right. And next up, we have... There's no other way to say this except contrasting poll styles. Allow me to explain. So, Game Informer had a poll where they went to fans and said, hey, what do you think the best video game of all time is? Like, legit, of all time. Okay? Over 200,000 votes came about. And the number one game of all time, as voted by these fans, is Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. That's pretty dope.
Yep.
Yep. So I want to... I thought I put the post on our thing, but I apparently didn't. I apologize for that. But the poll was interesting because it had, like, everything you would expect from the list. Like, it had the classic titles. It had the big favorites. And in the final four... were The Last of Us, Skyrim, Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time, and Red Dead Redemption 2. An interesting pick, I grant you. And then the finals was Ocarina of Time versus Skyrim. And Ocarina of Time won, which is pretty awesome. So, I mean, I like that. Okay, if I'm going to be completely honest, I would agree with 3 out of 4. Last of Us, Skyrim, and Zelda. Or Ocarina of Time. I gotta say specifically because there's a lot of great Zelda games. But I would agree with that. But Red Dead Redemption 2? That might have been an easy bracket. Okay? Let me just see. Here, I finally found it. Oh, yeah. It beat The Witcher Wild Hunt to get into the Final Four. Wow. And then Witcher, and then The Witcher beat Mass Effect too. Man, if you put Mass Effect, wow. I know. If you had put Mass Effect 2 into the Final Four, I would have called it a perfect Final Four. Like, I got nothing against Red Dead Redemption 2, but I feel there were better games. I feel there were better games. Okay, so and some of these, wow, man, I should post it back on our Discord. But like, some of these matchups are just crazy. Like, they had Super Mario World against Fallout New Vegas, and Mario won. And then, oh my gosh, Baldur's Gate 3 against Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. Gee, I wonder who won that one. It was Smash Brothers.
That would be a bracket.
Of course.
No, I'm kidding. It was actually Baldur's Gate 3. Baldur's Gate got to the final 8 before losing to Ocarina. So that could have been a Final Four game. But... yeah, Elder Scrolls, Skyrim beat Final Fantasy VII, Elden Ring had to face Link to the Past and it won, and then it lost to Skyrim, which is very ironic. The Last of Us beat Breath of the Wild to get into the Final Four. Like this roster is stacked with great titles. Oh my gosh, they put Metal Gear Solid against Tetris. Ah! And then Tetris actually beat Bloodborne, and Tetris was 14 seed.
Dang.
It's the March Madness, ladies and gentlemen. But again, 200,000 fan votes in Ocarina of Time came out on top. That's awesome. And it shows the love for Ocarina of Time. And I dig it. So we might have to, especially after following up the tonight's main event, we'll have to put the pin in this, but we should do a list of the best Nintendo games of all time. Like our top 5. It's going to be so hard.
That is going to be difficult to think about.
and for that one, we'll do individual lists. But
yeah.
for tonight, we'll be doing a combination. But like, these lists are hard. Like, I had to do it for another site, a list of the best like overall games of all time or something like that. And it's just like, they gave me like their 25. And I'm like, how am I supposed to pick the top 5? Like, these are all killers, you know?
Yeah.
And then it's like, then I see like one game that doesn't belong there. I'm like, yeah, I'm swapping you out. You don't belong here. Get out of here. Like, like, they put, what was it? Remember Firewatch?
Oh, bro. Okay.
They had Firewatch on the list and not Batman Arkham City.
What?
I know.
What?
What? Yeah, they had what was it? There was another game, and I'm like, I'm sorry, you have that, and you don't have the greatness that is Bayonetta. No, I'm joking. I didn't. She has such great assets. No, but it was like, sometimes you just, you can see it, like, yeah, that game is awesome, like, these are all killers, and you see, like, you see that one game, you see that one game, and you go, why is that on the list? Why is that here? And then I span my brain, I'm like, oh yeah, that game should be there, and that game should be there. So yeah, it's gonna be interesting when we do that future Nintendo best of list, because there's a lot. Heck, you could do just one on the Switch era, which you probably should do. That is what we absolutely should do. We should do, like, the best Switch games of all time. Like, that'll be still hard, but
the best Switch game of 2024 so far.
Princess Peach Showtime.
Or the best game in the Switch life so far as of this date.
Princess Peach Showtime, no. All right, so we told you about that poll to tell you about this poll, because remember, the last poll, which was done by Game Informer, great publication, had 200,000 votes. The next poll we're talking about is from BAFTA. Yes, that BAFTA. And they had a poll about what is the most iconic video game character of all time. They had 4,000 votes. And you want to know who they said was number one? Lara Croft. This is what happens when you don't have enough people voting. Okay, now I can already hear the screamers. No, we're not saying that Laura doesn't deserve number one because she's a woman. Grow up. Okay. I mean, how many times have I fawned over Karlach, and I've noted how much I love her strength and just her overall general flames and all that. You know, stick close to Mama K. Yes, ma'am. You know, I got nothing against video game women. Laura does not deserve to be number one. Okay, let's put this in more context. Here's the top five. Okay, top five. Number one, Laura. Number two, Mario. Number three, Agent 47. Number four, Sonic the Hedgehog, which means, once again, Mario beat Sonic. And number five, Sackboy. So, you want to still complain that there's nothing wrong with this list? I think there is! Yeah. Just for context, Link was 7. Shadowheart was 10. We all know it should be Karlach, and Karlach would be higher. Arthur Morgan was 11. Pikachu was 12. Okay, how is Pikachu 12?
I have no idea.
Exactly. Crash Bandicoot was 15. Okay, I actually don't mind that one. Cloud Strife was 16. Asterion was 17. Okay, clearly we have a Baldur's Gate bias. Kazuma Kiryu from Yakuza is 18. How did Kazuya even make the list?
I'm nice to see Kazuma making a list of sorts, but yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, Ellie from Last of Us is 19. You know, Ellie from the best video game narrative ever, 19, and then Nathan Drake is 20. So, yeah. This is certainly a list.
It certainly has video game characters on it, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Definitely a list about video game characters. I can totally agree with that, Scott. Like, I'm not saying that we're not trying to rag on this, but when we heard that Lara Croft won this and won over Mario and Link, and then again, Agent 47 is number three, who voted this list?
Seriously.
Yeah, who really said, hey, we're listing the most iconic video games characters of all time, and they said, yeah, Agent 47. What? Really?
Granted, how many people play Hitman over the years? I mean, sure, there may be generations and all that, but to say that Agent 47 is more iconic than, I don't know, literally the father of video games. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. It's weird. It's really weird. In fact, we were struggling for a main event idea, and then we saw this list and like, yeah, we're gonna do something like this. we're gonna make sure that a proper list gets made, ladies and gentlemen. Again, Lara Croft is absolutely iconic. And if you really think about it, the Crystal Dynamics games, the trilogy they did, helped redefine the character in the best ways. And I appreciate that.
First and second game, good. The third game,
So, and again, there's such thing as too much experimentalism. But while Laura is iconic, she's not number one. She's never been number one. You could argue she's the best female game character of all time.
With
maybe rivaling, of course, Samus Aran and Karlach. So,
I'll say Chun-Li, but fine.
Chun-Li. Yeah, Chun-Li's great too. You could throw in Bayonetta if you wanted. There's another list. Or Princess Peach. Okay.
True. I mean, think about it. Princess Peach. Got to get Princess Peach. Or Toadstool. Princess Toadstool.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, you can make the argument for that list, but number one gaming icon of all time? I'm sorry. I don't remember her movies hitting $1 billion, even with Angelina Jolie.
Ah!
Yeah, and do we want to talk about the reboot movie? No, we do not, do we?
I forgot that even happened.
Exactly. Which, you know what the saddest thing about that movie is? It has Walter Goggins in it, and I can guarantee you that man did a great job. Because that man could do no wrong in acting. Like, you can have him as a guest role in G.I. Joe 2, and he will steal the whole movie, and that's exactly what happened. He had like a 5-minute scene, and he chewed up that scenery like only Walter Goggins can. That man is special. And he was in a movie that no one remembers now. Scott doesn't even remember the movie. I remember the movie. Yeah, don't be like that BAFTA pull, people. Don't be. And again, how did Asterion get on the list?
Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, and again, yes, I know he won Best Voice Acting at the Game Awards. We could debate that all day. But, and Shadowheart probably shouldn't have been there. Should have been Karlach. But there was clearly something weird going on with those 4,000 people. That's just the truth. And that's the thing. Because it's a 4,000 people, you really have to wonder how the votes got divided. Like, how many number one votes did Laura actually get among those 4,000? I don't know.
Yeah, the sample size is just like, yeah, even for 4,000 people, nah.
Yeah.
Like, especially considering the gaming world as it is, who play video games, is like, yeah, it's just a poor sample size.
Yeah. So again, 200,000 votes, 4,000 votes. One of these things is not like the other. One of these things is wrong. So, moving on to another wrong thing. April Fools, everybody. Yeah. Because on April Fools, Sonic, the restaurant, revealed that you could eat Sonic the Hedgehog in pancake form. And then they actually did it.
Yep.
So I have before me the Sonic menu where you could eat this. I didn't realize that Sonic had pancakes. Oh, sorry, it's IHOP. No,
it's IHOP.
Yeah, IHOP.
No one was correcting me. I said Sonic Sonic, but anyway.
I mean, I know Sonic regards to like another diner place and like their ice cream thingy, but that's it.
They have great.
They also have chili dogs there, but you
see, there's your perfect crossover. No one touches the Hulk's dogs.
Anyway. I'm surprised Sonic still hasn't done a actual collab with Sonic.
It's only a matter of time. I bet you it's like Sega's thing. It's going to cost too much. I'm like, Sonic the restaurant isn't that rich. It's not like not like McDonald's. I mean, dude, if you're working with IHOP, you should work with Sonic.
Okay. Seriously, you think IHOP would cost more to work with?
I bet. So okay, so here's the menu. There's Tails 2x2x2, which is 2 eggs, 2 pancakes, 2 bacon strips, or 2 sausage links. Just the Tails, everything good in twos. Oh, just like Tails, everything good in twos. Ah, ha, 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 ha. Sonic's Blue Blur Special, double blueberry pancakes. Okay, I'm eating that. I would eat that.
That does sound good.
It sounds delicious. Double the blueberries for double the speed. Ask to try them with blueberry syrup, obviously. Okay. Knuckles Chicken Sandwich. Okay, that's disrespectful. He's an echidna, not a chicken. A crispy chicken sandwich with bacon, lettuce, tomato, avocado, obviously. Cheese and buttermilk ranch that won't leave you hungry. Order with a side of gold onion rings. Aha. Yeah. They should have made a Master Emerald joke.
They should have.
Okay, you ready for this one? This is a good one. Dr. Eggman's Benedict.
yeah, that's clever.
Benedict.
That's great.
You could have gone so many ways with that. A 300 IQ genius-like Eggman knows that Black Forest ham, poached eggs, and what does that say? Hollandaise sauce? Never heard of that. Makes for a superior meal. Uh-huh. Benedict. Next up is Amy's Sweet Strawberry Delight. Okay. Vanilla ice cream, chocolate syrup, and fresh strawberries atop a golden brown waffle quarter is a perfectly sweet dessert for an epic adventure. Ask to try it with strawberry syrup. Please don't stalk Sonic in the meantime. Huh? No, I made up that last part, but they should have made a stalking joke. I mean, you know it's true.
Yeah.
It's canon. in so many ways. Finally, Shadows Chaos Chocolate Pancakes. Oh, wait, I got to do that over again. Shadows Chaos Chocolate Pancakes. Go ahead and be a little chaotic. A 4-stack filled with chocolate chips is the ultimate pancake experience. Okay, I'm going to give him a B+ on the descriptions. They could have done a little more with the jokes, but I appreciate it. Also, they did the onion rings joke with Knuckles and not Sonic, even though rings were really his thing. They should have done a Master Emerald joke. But yeah, that's a good one. Ultimate pancake experience. So yeah, I will have one order of the Sonic's Blue Blur Special and one order of the Shadows Chaos Chocolate Pancakes. Getting hungry.
Putting those together would actually not be a bad idea. The blueberry and chocolate.
The power! The Super Sonic Super Shadow Special. There you go. The Super Shadow Sonic Special. There you go. Just like having all the Chaos Emeralds together, it'll make you go super. So yeah, I mean it. Okay, if you're nearby an IHOP and you have the ability to do so, do it. Take pictures and let us know how it tastes. I mean, it is IHOP, so it should
be
good.
You also apparently get like exclusive like DLC for one of the new Sonic games.
I did not see that. Let me go back.
Let me see if
collect
I can find
pan.
It.
Oh, here we go. Collect pan coins and unlock exclusive merchant gameplay. There's like a QR code.
Yep.
That's yeah. We're gonna get like an IHOP apron. Yeah. I went to or like a t-shirt that said I survived IHOP or something. Oh my gosh, what a world we live in, right guys?
Yep. I mean, again, the age of like quote like real like restaurant brands and like IPs, like with again like Burger King and Pokemon or any of that sort of things, like especially as an April Fool's joke, I mean, it could work. I mean, McDonald's has been doing it for years, if anything. Yeah. So, like, okay, if they can make it clever and actually make sense of these kind of collabs, like, fine. It could definitely work. Like, yeah, that's it. Like, this was an IHOP, but yeah, it's, like you mistaken it before. But yeah, if Sonic was doing something Sonic related, then yeah, that'd probably be good. Or I don't know, like we always had a lot of Mario things from McDonald's to Burger King, like. But it's always been an everywhere kind of deal. So yeah, just like, and like we're going to like, I don't know, in Japan, like you see these like specialized cafes, they're going to like personalize menus and all that to certain games, like a Final Fantasy cafe, Persona 5 cafe, something of that sort. Like you see these things pop up every single time. It's just like, it's only, like it seems like with this April Fool's joke, it just only recently got popular here. So when Japan's kind of been doing it this whole time. So I don't know. It's just kind of funny to think about it in perspective.
I would definitely like more along these lines, not just with Sonic, but other franchises, just to have fun. It's like, that's half the point of here. It's just having fun with it all. So yeah, let's have some fun here. Sadly, our next topic is not fun. It's about the Nintendo Live situation that happened earlier this year. If you recall, Nintendo Live was supposed to have this massive event in Tokyo where they're going to have, you know, the Zelda Orchestra, a huge Splatoon 3 event with all the crew members, you know, off the hook, deep cut, et cetera, et cetera. But it was canceled because of threats. Well, positively, a man was arrested for allegedly making the bomb threats to Nintendo gaming events, aka Nintendo Live. They allegedly sent 39 threats, including that they will murder event attendees, will bomb the venue, and Nintendo. Okay, seriously, what the F? I almost swore. What the heck, dude? like this is brutal. But yeah, they're like, this is what. And then the person who wrote it said, this is likely what forced the postponement of the Kyoshin Finals and the cancellation of Nintendo Live 2024 Tokyo. So, you know, why? Why would someone want to do this? It really doesn't make sense. I mean, I know we all know that there are disturbed individuals in the world, one of which is, of course, Geoff Keighley and Phil Spencer. Sorry. And yes, I've lost track of all the Phil Spencer jokes. I think we're over 20 at this point, but and more will come. But, you know, like this is legit disturbed that you would not just send threats, but you said 39 of them and then specifically detail who is going to get hurt. Like, what happened to lead to that? And in a Nintendo Live event, like, this isn't a, and I'm just saying this is justified if this was happened elsewhere, I'm not saying that, but like, this isn't a political rally or, you know, some other controversial event. This is Nintendo. This is Nintendo doing a live event to highlight the love of their games. And yet people are trying to threaten to kill people at them. That doesn't make sense.
It really doesn't. It's just sad.
Yeah. Like, when if you're going to go to like these kind of any event whatsoever, it's just not just Nintendo. Like, if you go to like make these kind of like threats and just like, again, threatening people's lives and livelihoods just because, I don't know, you're having a bad day. Like, what? You want to become the next Joker? Please, come on. Like, yeah, you really, yeah. And in this case, you do something to like a Nintendo event, like, oh, like take people's lives in a situation like this. Like, dude, check yourself again.
Yeah. So I hope that this was indeed, I hope this was the person that sent those threats, because if it is, then Nintendo hopefully won't have any reason to not do another Nintendo Live event. And yes, while they did post the concerts online, it's not the same. You know that there were fans looking forward to going to Nintendo Live in Tokyo. It's a real party. It looks like a lot of... I would love to have been at that. I wasn't going to be there, but I would have loved to.
Yeah, just like being... Again, seeing Pearl Marina, seeing the Splatoon concert, or like the live orchestra of Tears of Kingdom and Breath of the Wild. Like,
and just Legend of Zelda in general.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yep. Who wouldn't want to be that? Of course. And just also seeing like the reaction of people being in that concert is also part of the experience. So, yeah, it's just nothing like it. And the fact that it can't because of these threats coming up and up. Again, ensuring safety of the people is like, dude, you party pooper. Thinking party pooper.
Yeah. So hopefully this is the guy. Hopefully he gets put away so we don't have to worry about this again. And Nintendo doesn't have to worry about this again, because you know they want to do these events because they connect with their fans and they can just have a fun experience. And we can honestly say Sony and Microsoft don't do stuff like this.
Nope.
They do certain events, sure, but nothing on this scale, nothing like this. So let's let us have fun. Especially right now in the world. We need as much fun as we can get.
Yes, please.
Stop ruining it. So, okay, let's get more positive. Let's get positive again. Let's talk Princess Peach Showtime. We do not have the official sales numbers for the game yet. However, in Japan, the game was apparently the number one title for two straight weeks. And according to Stealth, our reliable insider, just in terms of physical sales, it's over 100K. So obviously digital sales will improve that number in Japan. So... If this goes the way I think it will, especially in the U.S., I think that this will definitely be a million seller, if it's not already a million seller. And it'll just be a nice one of them casual successes for Nintendo. And then they say, oh, Princess Peach sold a million units on her own without Mario or Luigi or any of the other crew. You know, maybe we should give her a franchise. Yes, you should.
Yes.
Yes. And as Stealth actually outlined in another tweet, Luigi's Mansion started out with just 3.5 million, just 3.5 million on GameCube, then 6.5 million for 2 on the 3DS, and then 14 million on the Switch with Luigi's Mansion 3. So now imagine building up Peach to get like somewhat those numbers. I'm not saying she will sell like 15 million one day, but you never know.
It's a possibility.
You'd never know until you like actually make the game. So very good news for Peach. Hopefully we do hear like another number, like a million or so. And this is proof that, hey, if it's selling well, get started on that next game for the Switch 2 or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's like, and just as a quick recap as well from like the reviews, like the like now that people have got their hands on it, it's like, I just been kind of seeing like the different like audience reactions, like one being Arlo says like he like it's fine, he's trying to struggle to understand it because it is such a casual game, but he understands like what Princess Peach is here in this game. And then like many other people basically enjoy what it is. It's definitely nothing hard. It's not nothing like, if you want something extreme skill level, then this game is not for you. But overall, like, as I said, the sales, people still like it, people loved it, and here's hoping if the sales continue to climb up as it is and become in the Millionaire Club, then here's hoping that we can probably get a Princess Peach game in a bit more of a hardcore threshold.
Yeah. So, again, we still need to hear the final numbers, of course, but it's looking positive.
Yep.
It's looking positive. And honestly, that's what we need to see. Like, just these positive numbers. It's already got the positive reviews, and now we just need to see the positive sale numbers, and we're good. And then hopefully Peach will be good. Time will tell. Time will tell. All right, and finally, something actually unexpected from the Pokemon Company, ladies and gentlemen. They released a shiny guide for Pokemon Scarlet and Violet.
Yep.
Yeah. Faith is very happy about this. Sadly, she couldn't be on the show. I was gonna, again, that's just 2 weeks in a row where I honestly had a story tailored to her. Last week was, of course, the Sprigatito hate. So, you know, she's just going to have to endure that. And now I was just going to talk about the shiny guy because I actually found out about this from her and she's really happy about it. But the reason this is big news is that Nintendo and the Pokemon Company don't talk about shinies that often.
No, they don't.
They've never been one to say, like, hey, this is how you get shinies. They want you to just go out there and find it yourself randomly. Because the algorithm is incredibly small on the chance that you get it. And yeah, I found a shiny Hoppip 5 minutes into Pokemon Scarlet. That's just how random it is. And then I don't think I found another one the entire rest of the game. So, okay. But they did a full-on guide saying, like, hey, you can get the shiny charm by completing a Pokedex. You can look for mass outbreaks because there's a higher chance, obviously, of them happening there since so many Pokemon are in one spot. And there's certain food items you can get to increase your shiny chance with a specific type. Then it's just wash, rinse, repeat, and be patient. You're patient, aren't you, Pokemon fans? Yeah. You're the patient kind of folk, right? So I have the guide up on the Outer Haven website, and hopefully the Pokemon Company does some stuff like this next time. And, oh, I don't know, makes it even more likely to get shiny Pokemon in the future. Just saying. Also, I want to note that, remember the Red Gyarados?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't realize that was a shiny Pokemon.
All these years you didn't realize? Really?
No, because the story stated that it was a... in the story, it stated that it was a Magikarp that was affected by the Team Rocket signal, and it evolved to keep its red coloring. It never clicked that meant it was a shiny Pokemon. Because I was just like, oh, it was a Pokemon affected by Team Rocket. That's the canon story. And it's like, no, that's a shiny Pokemon. I'm like, oh, okay. Of course, I'm also a teen, so I'm not actually thinking about shiny Pokemon. I definitely did not see shiny Pokemon in the first few generations.
No, I didn't either.
Yeah. My first natural one, I really think, was in Alola via a shiny Pikipek. And it just showed up. I'm like, that's a shiny. I should catch that. And it is. And then I caught a Gloom somewhere in between. And then it was that Hoppip in Scarlet. And outside of that, the Red Gyarados and the shiny Ponyta from Arceus, that's the only shiny Pokemon I've ever caught. So it's hard, even for us longtime trainers. So, and I'm not going to spend my time collecting the Pokedex just to get a shiny charm to double the rate. That's it. That's all it does. It's double the rate. So if you had a 1% chance before, you now have a 2% chance.
So much higher.
Woo! Living the dream! All right, and now we shall head to our main event, because in light of the lists, both good and confusing, that we have talked about, we are going to try to do something very, very hard. We are going to do a list of the top 5 Nintendo characters of all time. So, let's see, what would this topic be under? Let's call it a new meeting of the NEP Secret Society. All right, I call this Society to Order, and let's just get number one right out of the way. It's Mario.
Mario. Yes.
Sorry, was that a surprise to any of you? Were you surprised that we have Mario on the top of the list? What? So yeah, Mario is obviously the icon of icons. He's the one that started Nintendo in many ways via Donkey Kong. Yes, I know technically the game was called Donkey Kong, but Mario was there. We know this is fact. Deal with it. And then Mario, of course, exploded in popularity. He's been everywhere. He was featured in the freaking Olympics. Like, and I'm not even talking the games. I'm talking like the actual Tokyo Olympics.
Yeah.
When they did the video reveal of them coming out of the warp pipe, you know, that's how iconic he was. Is that they knew that if they did that reference at the Olympic ceremony, that people would get the joke. So, that's talent, ladies and gentlemen. So, and of course, last year with both Mario Wonder, Mario RPG, and the Super Mario Brothers movie, he's still popular.
Yes.
Like 40 plus years later. Because remember, the NES was 1983 and arcades was before that. So 40 plus years of life. And he's still kicking.
Yep.
He's still selling millions upon millions of units. He's the mover. And everyone suspects and expects that he will be the killer app, first party wise, for the Switch 2, whatever it is. So, for the game, I obviously think it's an Odyssey sequel or follow-up. So, and we're looking forward to that. And we know it's going to be good, more than likely. Because that's what Nintendo does! So,
good Mario games.
Good Mario. I mean, let's be honest. Let's name bad Mario games.
All the sports titles. No.
Come on. Not all.
Not all the sports titles.
All the bad ones are going to be sports titles.
I mean, the only thing that the reason sports titles is pretty much after like Striker's Charge. That's pretty much the only thing I can remember.
Yeah. No, okay. Let's be honest here. Like, Mario is missing, which isn't even technically a Mario game. Sticker Star, obviously. Let's see. Paper Mario or Mario Luigi Paper Jam, that was pretty bad. Galaxy. I'm joking.
Good, I was gonna have some words.
We will have words. How dare you insult Rosalina? Wait, Mario was in that game? No, like there are a few sprinkled out, but Nintendo knows that if they screw up a Mario game, they're never gonna hear the end of it.
Yeah.
So. And there have been some, like, basic Mario titles. Like, remember the gold coin one on the 3DS? Like, what was that? New Super Mario Bros. 2 or something like that?
It
was all about collecting the million coins. Like, great in concept, not so great in execution. There is such thing as too much experimentalism.
Yep.
So, how about New Super Mario Bros. U? I mean, that was fine, but it was hardly revolutionary.
Yeah.
3D World was much, much better. Than that, you know, we got Catsuit Mario in that one. Yes. So yes, Mario obviously is number one. Number two, I think it's still very obvious, Link.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, he was the second icon of Nintendo. Yes, sorry, Donkey Kong. He's still
not on the list.
Still not on the list. You're our Vegeta. You'll get your day in the sun. Who am I kidding? But yes, he's the icon that has honestly been holding down like the more recent eras. Yes, I know Mario has been doing incredible too, but it's Breath of the Wild that's been getting the Game of the Year awards. It's Breath of the Wild, it's Tears of the Kingdom. Heck, even a Link's Awakening remake was incredible and did incredibly well on the Switch.
Yep.
And Nintendo's been like taking their time, fleshing out the game. Oh my gosh. So Death Battle, which no word yet on if it's going to survive, but they've been continually doing their ballot banter, and there's this guy named Sam, who I just can't stand for various reasons, but not only did he say that Octopath Traveler was a mid-RPG, he had words about Tears of the Kingdom and how it was like an unnecessary sequel, and it was like totally totally worse than Breath of the Wild, and I'm just like, can this guy just shut up? And then like one of the editors popped in and goes, you know what? I would give it like 8 out of 10 at best. I'm like, I would take an 8 out of 10. 8 out of 10 is better than what Sam is saying.
Yeah.
Like he was just hammering it away. I'm just like, dude, what is wrong with you? Well, there's a lot of things wrong with him, I can guarantee you that. But listen to Death Battle cast sometimes and you just like, he's annoying. You
know, one of those people that feels like they don't have any joy in their life anymore.
Well, no, he thinks he's like the funniest guy, and it's like not the case. He was having a debate with one of their other cast members, and this guy presented a very important argument about like what his power was doing. Like he was taking a very small space and using the power of a lantern ring to expand it, which is physically impossible, but he did it anyway because of willpower. And then Sam's like, well, that doesn't make any sense. So what's he doing, gaslighting reality? Like,
what
are you talking about? Okay, but yeah, he hated Breath or Tears of the Kingdom. Just like, yeah, you can go away now. and then as we just said with the poll, people have such feelings about Ocarina of Time to this day that they voted it the best game of all time. So, you know, this franchise has done so well for so long. And just when you think, like, oh, it's about to hit, like, a lesser point, like what happened with the Skyward Sword. That game was a critical darling, but didn't sell as much as Twilight Princess. And then what happens next? Breath of the Wild.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's going to be, I can't wait to see what they do next. I know it'll probably be another 4 years or so, unless they were working on it during the late end of Tears of the Kingdom, which I don't think was happening, given how much delays and effort they were clearly putting into this to not have it be buggy at launch. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Having a game not be buggy at launch.
What a concept.
I can't even say that about Baldur's Gate 3 because I've been keep hitting these little bugs. That
yeah,
are so...
no, it's buggy.
It's a funny thing when you mentioned that point because like there was like also another article as well regarding to like apparently younger generation is going to be the main audience for the retro revival. I wonder why. Let's see. microtransactions, have to download a 1 gigabyte update datas, or like all these different things. Yeah, buggy messes. I don't know. Retro gaming seems pretty good now these days. So, yeah,
complete
exactly.
Complete game? What?
Yeah. Back in my day when we bought the new games, they were complete. We didn't need updates. Yes, sure, Grandpa, shut up. I need to go download my day one patch. Like, I'm sorry, when day one patch becomes jargon in the gaming industry, something has gone wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, getting back to the list. We got off on tangent, but I feel really good now because I got to rant a little bit, so thank you guys. okay, number three, Pikachu?
That was my guess, yeah.
That's probably a good spot there.
Yeah. Again, how did he get, what was it? That was 12 in the last poll.
He was like 12, yeah.
12. Like, and I know what you're thinking, wait a minute, but the Pokemon company is intentionally with Nintendo. I'm sorry, where are all the Nintendo, or all the Pokemon games, basically?
Nintendo!
Yeah, go play it on your PlayStation. Oh, wait.
Unless you're playing it on your phone, that's pretty much the only other place you can get Pokemon.
Yeah,
Pokemon Go.
Exactly, like the only, I would call, main title that you can get outside of Nintendo consoles is Go. Like, I wouldn't put Masters on there, I wouldn't include Magikarp Jump or whatever.
No.
Pokemon Go is the only main title I would say you can get outside of a Nintendo platform, and that's by design because Nintendo knows that the Pokemon Company and the Game Freak make good games for the systems, and that they made sure that they only make them for them systems. So yeah, it's Pikachu's the icon. All right, Pikachu's so iconic that they made a new anime series without Ash and Pikachu, and they brought in a new Pikachu.
They still needed a Pikachu somewhere.
Exactly. Then they promoted him. They made him a captain. It's a Captain Pikachu now. And he's the best character on the show, and I still maintain everything I said about Horizons. Yeah, I saw an article on my phone the other day. It was Pokemon Horizons continues to differentiate itself from the main series. I'm like, that's not always a good thing, as I said in my review. I was like, this never happened to Ash. Like, yeah, it never needed to happen to Ash. Ash was fine without it. Like, anyway. But yeah, Pikachu, iconic, is represented in many different ways. Like, there are many different forms of Pikachu. That's the irony here. There's the fat Pikachu of the first few generations. Then there's the skinny Pikachu of the anime. Then there's Detective Pikachu with Danny DeVito. Come on, that was a good one. I was expecting Will to laugh at that one. He used to make the Danny DeVito joke. Danny DeVito and now Ryan Reynolds. And now there's Captain Pikachu. There's Balloon Pikachu, Surfer Pikachu, Pichu. No one counts that one. And so on and so forth. Pikachu is freaking iconic. He is the face of Pokemon. 9 generations later, you have to fight to. There's only a few Pokemon I would argue are more popular in certain ways than Pikachu, and 2 of them are in Gen 1.
Yes, Charizard. Yep.
And? Come on. Don't overthink it. If it's not Pikachu, it's not Charizard. It's
Mewtwo?
Yes!
Okay, yeah.
The original final boss. Suck it, Rock. Wrestling kids will get that joke. But, you know, Pikachu is the best, period. End of story. They make sure that he's in every generation of Pokemon. It's like, you will find Pikachu if you know where to look. So go look. All right. 4 and 5. This is where things get interesting. So the first three were really interesting. Scott, who would you pitch for number 4, best Nintendo character of all time?
Probably Samus.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Explain why.
I mean, Samus really was the first kind of surprise character in the sense of us not really knowing the gender of Samus, but just being really interested in the design and the concept of the character until you get to, you know, the speed running part of the Metroid games and you start getting to see Samus without her armor.
Yeah, and then people kept wanting to see her without her armor.
Yeah. Her best design still with the armor, though.
Oh, absolutely. Various suit is iconic, period.
Well, we also have a Metroid game on pretty much every console I can think of.
Yeah.
With the exception
except for N64. N64, yeah.
Yeah, 64.
But yeah, I'll agree with Samus. Will you okay with that?
Like, I was actually thinking of another candidate. Like, I would have probably put Samus at number 5.
Okay.
Because
who's your number 4? Remember, this is a debate. This is a debate between all of us. So, who would you put at number 4 then?
Like, if there's any, probably, like, another iconic character, I was about to go with Donkey Kong. Granted, it's not as, media presence at like Pikachu, but again, being alongside with Mario again, we're in the first game. Like, you kind of have to remember that Donkey Kong also played a part in it. And like, yes, Donkey Kong has not had many games throughout the years, like very few. You can literally count them on your hands. But like, Donkey Kong is like from the arcades to consoles. I mean, like even with the briefest of offering, I feel like it still has that like. As like power alongside Mario, because again, if you didn't have Donkey Kong, you wouldn't have Mario in a sense. So I feel like kind of a bit of a symbiotic relationship. I feel like maybe not as a higher echelon.
Let's see. I guess this makes me the deciding vote. I'm gonna go with Samus at number 4 because while Donkey Kong has his moments, Samus has repeatedly reinvented herself in multiple ways, and every time you think her franchise is done, she comes back. Like, again, we had the original, we had Super Metroid, and then we had like some of the Game Boy games, and then she went away but was only on Smash Brothers. Then she came back with Prime and Fusion, which completely injected life into the franchise.
Yep.
Prime went for 3 games, then was Other M, we don't talk about that, then there was Federation Force, we really don't talk about that. And then Metroid Prime 4 happened, which we can't talk about that because it's not out yet still.
It's still not here.
It's still not here. But then Dread came out. And it's just like, dang, this is awesome. And then Metroid Prime Remastered came out. And everyone's like, man, this game is so epic still all these years later. You know, Donkey Kong is great. But I think Samus, especially as the dominant woman of the Nintendo brand. Sorry, Princess Peach. I think she takes the cake.
Pancake?
We've been talking about cakes a lot in this episode.
It's the middle of the night. I don't need to eat right now. Come on.
I got fries waiting for me in the microwave. But yeah, I'm gonna go with Scott on this one. I'm gonna say Samus is number 4.
All right.
So number 5. You know, Will's vote would be Donkey Kong. What about you, Scott?
I don't know if I'd go for Donkey Kong, but at the same time, I'm thinking of who I'd put for number 5.
I see. I told you this is where it gets hard because it's who's left? Like, because remember, like, I would love to jump in here and say Ike is the best character. But that's illogical. That's not fair because Ike has a following, obviously. But you know, he's not even the best Fire Emblem character in some people's minds. Whether you have like Lucina or Dimitri or Edelgard.
I mean, again, the booming of Three Houses of Awakening. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I still think Ike is better than all of them, but, you know, that's just me.
But again, that's due to the popularity of Smash Brothers. That helped out a lot.
No, I liked him because of Path of Radiance and Radiant Dawn. Smash Brothers just was accentuated how great he was. Yeah. But, like, who's left? Like, even if we bring up, like, the Smash Brothers roster and we look at, like, we can't say Star Fox.
No.
Captain Falcon, like,
no,
very niche.
They don't
very
care
niche.
Enough about F-Zero.
If we're being honest, Falcon's more, popularity is more of a meme than anything else, because if they really liked him, his games would have sold a lot more.
As I say, more people know about Captain Falcon than they know of his games.
Exactly. Yeah, like we can't say Ness. Can't say
Yoshi. Nah.
Ooh, Yoshi.
I mean, part of the Mario universe, sure. Like, he has that symbiotic with Garden Mario, but is Yoshi iconic? I mean, granted, he has Yoshi's story and Yoshi's 64.
And I think Yoshi is iconic, but if we're going to the another people in the Mario, I wonder if I'd say like Bowser.
Yeah, or Luigi.
Yeah,
of course.
And I'm like, I'm willing to debate that, because it's like, when we think of iconic, we think of, okay, we put this character up and people know immediately who that is and their best games, or like their best appearances or whatever. And you know, it's kind of ironic that we're gonna have potentially two Mario characters. That just goes to show how great the Mario universe is.
Yeah.
Because Luigi has his own games, and as we noted earlier, Luigi's Mansion has sold very well for Nintendo. Bowser was nominated, I think, won a Golden Globe. Peaches. So, you know, that's iconic, pretty much. So, and then when you think of the other characters, like Donkey Kong, Yoshi, oh, Kirby! What about Kirby?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Kirby is definitely up there.
I'll put my vote for Kirby for 5. Because think about it, he's the pink puffball. He's been around. He's the first game that Sakurai made.
That's
where the legend of Sakurai started. He wanted a game that would be easy to play and fun to enjoy, and then he just built everything up from there. That's how he gained his fame. And Kirby has been in gods, like dozens of titles, which immediately
like 25, alongside Mario. Not many more.
Kirby games are there. There are 39 Kirby games.
Jeez.
Okay, there's my vote. I am totally voted for Kirby at number 5.
I wouldn't argue it. Yeah, Kirby.
Yeah,
is
I'm going with Kirby too.
Yeah.
Okay, then. So there you go. That's our top 5.
Much easier than I was expecting.
No, I mean, we struggle. Like, but then that's always the problem. Like, I forgot about Kirby, man.
Yeah.
And Kirby is he has a media presence, like from toys and all that. So yeah, and again, Sakurai's child, if anything. So yeah.
All right then. So number 1. Mario, number 2, Link, number 3, Pikachu, number 4, Samus, and number 5, Kirby.
Okay, and pretty much the story fight about Smash Brothers. Yeah.
Smash Brothers list. Well, if you think about it, when you see the intro to, what was it, Brawl, I think it is?
Smash Bros. 64 as well. It's Mario versus Kirby.
No, but like that, but it's like they do like the intro with them like running in, remember? And it's Mario, it's Link, it's Kirby, and it's Pikachu, and then Samus shows up. So, like, there you go. It was foretold. It was foretold. So, and now the real twist would be if we made this a top 10 list. We will not.
That would take a while.
No. We're running out of time right now. We need to sleep.
We're not going to do it, but like that would be hard because obviously Donkey Kong would be there, but like Yoshi, Luigi, maybe Bowser, but like who else? Like who would fill out that top 10? I don't know.
Yeah, like who is on that second half? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. We'll just have to see what happens next. But the best thing about Nintendo is that we could have this debate and have a serious question of who's number 4, who's number 5, and whatnot. When you look at Sony and yes, Xbox, can you even get to 5? Like, legitimately, like, you can't say, like, if we were to do Sony, you can't do Ellie. No. And 2 games.
even the age of the mascots back in the late 90s, like, yeah, like the only one I could probably imagine of Sony was obviously one they even made a fun of it is freaking Kratos from God of War, but I wouldn't call that as iconic too much. And yeah, I think there was the other one with Solid Snake, but that's also up in the air. So regarding icons on other companies, of course, with Xbox, it's just Halo. Yeah. So I mean, exactly. what else do you think? Yeah,
oh, you got so. Oh, and by the way, I just happened to scroll across a tweet of some Famitsu hardware sales for the end of March. The Switch was obviously in the lead with like 40,000, PS5 in second with 18,000, Xbox Series X 438. Xbox Series X 938. So congratulations. You sold 500 more of your better version. Yay!
Yeah.
So, yeah. But Nintendo, one of the reasons we love Nintendo is they have this such a great deep library of characters. It's just so much fun. And they could say, like, hey, we haven't done this character in a while. We haven't done this character in a while. We are praying for the return of Donkey Kong and Star Fox and Captain Falcon. You know, we want them back because we know that if they do it right, they can make these franchises great again. Oh, gods. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be like, they can return the franchise to former glory. There we go. And then with Peach, they have the potential now of saying like, hey, Peach did pretty well on the Switch. Let's make another game. Make it bigger. Make it longer and see how it does on the Switch too. And then boom, there's another franchise for them. They have that potential better than anybody else. And they won't be spending, you know, $300 million on a game and then hoping it sells enough to justify their development cost.
Yeah. So, like this whole topic we're going into it all, like, yeah, like, again, if people like the games themselves, if it sells as it is, even like be it under like within their budget, and people like it, then of course people's gonna remember it overall. Like again, Mario been selling over the years, and they within their budget, they have not changed the formula too much, and yet people still love it at what it comes out for better or for worse. So it's like, yeah, as you said, Todd, like just make a product, people, and if it sells well, people will remember it. It's just that. It's just that way. Yeah.
Indeed. And with that, we are ending this episode of another Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. What would you rate as the top five Nintendo characters of all time? Feel free, please, to, you know, disagree with our list, rearrange some things, and see what you feel is the best of the best. We'll listen. And, of course, what did you think of the picture of Sakurai, Yoshi P, and Harada? What is your conspiracy theory of what was really happening that night? What was really going on? Do you agree with the Ocarina of Time being the best game of all? Or do you agree with Lara Croft? No, you don't. You don't agree with that one. Did you partake in the IHOP Sonic April Fool's joke? If you did, how'd it taste? I'm very curious. And are you going to check out the Pokemon Shiny Guide so you can finally get your own shiny Pokemon? Let us know in the comments below. So, for Skull Kid Scott, Wario Will, I am Triforce Todd. Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. We are not out of lives. We made it to the end of the level. So, raise the flag.